Harry. Harry Hughes, I want you to meet Carl Erickson.
I know Carl.
Carl Erickson danced at my mother and dad's wedding in Douglas at Ormond's Hall in 1901.
This and here, Nash is talking.
And here he is playing the...
On top of that, I'm the oldest active trombone player in the state of Alaska and many other states.
This is Carl Erickson still playing slide trombone here with the All Pioneer Orchestra from Ketchikan. This has been the biggest thrill of my whole attendance at the conference here to meet Carl Erickson. My God.
Put your name on the tape, Bill.
Well, this is Bill Cashin talking.
That's right.
My mother and dad were married in Douglas in 1901. And to prove it, this is an eyewitness here.
I got a cash.
All right.
I got a cash.
That is some recording of the Ketchikan band. There's 9 pieces playing tonight at the Elk Hall for the Pioneer Convention.
attend to one of our Alaska again.
Okay. Now, I'll give you a name on it.
Oh, yes. The name is Martin, Martin Wilson, and I'm a paid slave of the British Petroleum Company. Out here looking for oil, that illusion of quality. And if I were asked to say what my impressions were of Alaska, well, the first thing is that it's far, far too big. The only way you can get from point A to point B is going through point C, D, and E, and F. And occasionally E.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd bear me out on that.
I'll let you hear that.
Now, what we were talking about planes. You mentioned, you go ahead and tell me what your impression of the airplanes were here and how you felt about it.
Well, my impression was that the pilots were absolutely tremendous people.
That's recording right.
They do have a very, very difficult job to do out here. We've got about 17 or 18 geologists in the field. They get dropped in the morning, and at some time later, the helicopter comes out and picks them up somewhere down in the valley. But the helicopter pilot has to find them. That is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is putting practically an unbearable strain upon the helicopter pilot to look for these people, because they are, in fact, the mother, the nurse, the lifeline between the man and the camp. Now, I found a very curious and rather interesting thing. If you're sitting on the side of a hill with snow and icy rain and sort of all the things messing about, the helicopter comes in and it settles down in some place, and that is absolutely marvelous. And it takes you to a tent, and that is tremendous. Tent is your whole being. But after 6 or 7 days, you get so fed up with your tent, then you want to get back someplace from shore. I once hitchhiked sort of 1,200 miles, I suppose, just to get shore. And that was a ridiculous thing. My wife wouldn't understand it, so I only had to stay about 6 hours from the place at home.
But do you realize how long and how hard it would be to get to the points that you go with a helicopter or a plane compared?
This is a list of the delegates.
You're on the air.
Delegates to 1961 Pioneers of Alaska Grand Igloo Conventions. And Bobby Sheldon read the names.
Sig Wald, George Vojanich, Colin MacDonald, Jim MacDonald, Stanley Olziski, Andrew Wickham, Harry Hughes, Paul Griman, Jack Crook, Harry Abakoff, Ted Loftus, Frank Chapados, Ed B. Davis, A. E. Andy Anderson, Robert Sheldon, Art Herring, Tom Jones, Henry Brockman, Otto Geist, Bill Cashin, Martin Victor. Robert Sheldon was elected delegate at large.
And Robert Sheldon's working hard on his job.
Yeah, just a minute here. That Paul Griman was a Paul Griman Sr. on there, because, you know, there is a Paul Griman Jr., and he's also a member of the IGZO.
Yeah. That'll be correct.
Well, I'll put... That's the reason I got up there.
I'll put SR on there, but it wasn't on there as far as...
September the 20th.
61 at Fairbanks, Alaska. There's a meeting of Bobby Sheldon's committee on Pioneer trip to Anchorage. And present are President Forbes Baker, past President Bob Sheldon, past President Frank Young, and past President Paul Griman, and Andrew Wickham, and Harry Hughes. Just a little memorandum who attended the meeting.
Okay, Harry.
It's September the 20th, not September the 2nd on there for correction. This is Saturday, September 23rd, at Fairbanks, Alaska. And I have a longtime friend and a member of the Pioneers of Alaska, Mr. Jack Corby, here with me, and I would like to get a little information in his history to file away for the Pioneer Records. Now, Jack, will you tell me your full name and where you was born
And your age? Start by name. Just go ahead and talk, just like you're talking right to me.
My full name is John Anton Korva, born in St. Paul, Minnesota, 1892. I learned an electrician's trade starting when I was 17 years old, and I've worked at the electrical business ever since. I started to travel, do outside work for different contractors when I was 19 years old, become a journeyman when I was 19.
Where was that at?
In St. Paul, Minnesota. And then from there I started traveling, and then I went to the Army in 1918. I got out in 1919, and then I started traveling for the Rock Island Railroad. We covered 14 states. From there I went to the West Coast to Los Angeles and stayed there 3 years. Then from there to Seattle, 1924, and in 1929, my boss told me that he has no more work around the state of Washington, but he said he has a chance to get some work in Alaska. So he asked me if I'd go to Alaska, and I told him, I said, go ahead. I said, I thought it was nothing but icebergs and glaciers, but he told me there was green grass growing up there. And the first job I got was Skagway. And then the next year went to Juneau, and next year to Fairbanks. I wired the courthouse, big post office building, and the next year I wired the new Fairbanks High School. Then I went mining in the Circle District, and it went flop. From there I went back to Fairbanks to go in the electrical business, and I've been in the electrical business until I retired 3 years ago.
Now, in your experiences here in Alaska, what do you think of the country and the life here and the things that exist here?
If I was young, I would stay in Alaska, and I think Alaska was very good to me. I made good here, and I think the young people from the states, from the lower states, should come to Alaska, as this is a pioneer country. And there's a lots to be done, and they can make good if they just watch their P's and Q's.
Jack, tell us about a fishing trip of yours. How do you prepare to go fishing? What do you do, and what do you find when you get there?
Well, before the war, we could go to the Chattanooga, the Salcha, most any of these creeks, and get your limit in about a half an hour. Well, that time there was no limit. But we just take enough home to feed our families and our friends. We didn't waste any fish. Today, it's hard to find any fish anywhere. Yet, when I come to the country, on the Steese Highway used to be thousands and thousands of caribou. Today, you can hardly see one. Should I say something about the game commission? The Game Commission still says they're on the increase, but I say they're on the decrease. Moose and caribou both. And it won't be long. You'll have to stop shooting the animals or you won't have any.
That's right. The wildlife has commenced to realize it.
And I can't understand why they make a bear a game animal, as they are the most destructive animals that we have in Alaska. If it was my way, I'd shoot them and leave them lay.
Well, Jack, tell about how you get in your car and you go off and you take your bedroll with you and your things you do and your fishing tackle. Describe your pack, what you take.
When I go fishing, I generally take my pole, and lunch, a few sandwiches, a couple of bottles of beer, and go out and catch my fish and have my fun. Sometimes I stay overnight, sometimes 2-3 days, but at least I come back with some fish.
Is there any place else you ever was in your life you can do that?
Well, back in Minnesota in the early days, but now they tell me it's pretty well fished out. And also the West Coast used to be good up to about 1925 and 26. But after that, it's hard to catch any fish. We used to catch salmon at Valdez. There's nothing to catch salmon. Go down there and bring back as many as you want. And also down to Chitna. But today, things are changed. Laws prohibit you from taking home what few fish you want to can or preserve for winter use, and it's hard to get them anyway, so makes no difference.
Well, if now you're retiring, Jack, your reason for retiring, going to the States, what is the cause for that?
The cause for the me retiring and going to the States, the lower states, is because I broke my back about 21, 22 years ago, and it's affecting my foot. And my foot can't stand the cold weather like it used to. It gets cold, and I don't know when the thing gets cold. It's liable to freeze, and the doctors told me to go to a warmer climate, and that's the reason why I'm leaving. Otherwise, I think I'd stay here and be buried at Birch Hill. I also bought a lot right next to my wife, where she's buried there now.
And that's your wish, that you be brought back to be buried here in
that's
Alaska?
That's right. That's my wish.
Where it's been your home for so many years.
And I want to be buried by the pioneers.
Well, that's appreciated, Jack, because we have too little knowledge of too many members, which is a hardship on the organization to contact the heirs and the relatives and the friends and the people that are interested in them.
Mm-hmm. And there will be enough money provided for burial purposes so the pioneers won't be out of anything.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Right. There's many of the pioneers are thinking that way now, Jack. Mm-hmm. Where there's quite a few that are carrying burial policies and things to help, because we couldn't possibly raise the money to bury all that we've had in the last two or three years.
That's right. Well, Jack, next week we expect to make a trip to the States and settle the wife's estate. It may take a year or so, but I'm going to make several trips back here if I'm alive.
Now you tell who's on the trip with you and
my sister is here from Seattle, and she is going down the highway, which will be her first trip. And I made it six times already, and this will be my seventh time, so I know the country pretty well, and I know just about where to stop and what to find.
Give your sister's name.
My sister's name, she lives in Seattle, Carolyn Petrasik, and her husband is a plumber there. He also wants to make the trip to Fairbanks by the Alaska Highway. And I think when that is Alaska Highway is paved, it'll be the biggest tourist run in North America.
It will be.
It will. You darn right it will.
Now, do you have any other relation down there alive, Jack, that you'd care to acknowledge as fact on here in case something comes up later and they wanted to check history of you?
Well, I have a sister in Seattle, Francis, and I have two brothers and a sister in St. Paul, Minnesota, still living. They know my history and they know my life up to date.
Well, Jack, this is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, and I want to wish Jack the best of everything, and he's been a longtime friend of mine. Even though we're friendly competitors, I'm right behind him. I'm retiring also.
Retiring also.
Mm-hmm. So, Jack, I want to thank you for this little bit of information and wish you the best of everything. And I hope you and your sister have a good trip home. And we see you back in Alaska next spring.
Maybe before that.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to...
Yeah, just really run it back.
What is today, 26th?
Yeah.
September the 26th, and we left Fairbanks at 7:05 this morning. And it's Andy Wicken and Frank Young and Dolly Young and Harry Hughes on our way to the Pioneer Convention at Anchorage, Alaska. And we're in the Riches and Roadhouse, and we have a very old-timer here with us, Mrs. Adriana Coyle. Frank, what do you got to say about her trip?
Well, things look pretty good so far. We're sailing along, doing the best we can.
Well, you want to send a word down to an anchorage?
Okay.
coffee here at the roadhouse, and we'll be on our way in a few minutes.
The time is 8:54, and we're leaving Richardson Roadhouse, and Mrs. Adriana Coyle feels pretty blue that she's not able to make the trip, but I told her we'll stop on the way back and visit with her. This is Frank Young, Andy Wicken, and Dolly Young and Harry Hughes.
We're on Tenderfoot Creek that flows into the Tananaw, and we're just about to cross where the road crosses the creek down, and there's an old boiler house that's left from the early days there. Well, in that location, the richest ground that was found here on the Tenderfoot was located right at that spot. Some of that ground was very, very rich, coarse gold, but the old-timer had to give up the job of mining it on account of the Tananaw River water coming in on them. And that's the way the situation stands today. It's still there.
It still could be rich ground.
It still could be rich ground, and it's just waiting for the day when the price of gold might change, or conditions might be such that modern methods of mining might start to
operate.
We're at about
miles 76 right here, aren't we?
About mile 76, yes.
Well, we're on our way to the next stop, and I'm going to shut it off right here.
We're now at Shaw Creek Bridge, overlooking the Tananaw River and the scenery. And, Frank, you got anything to say?
Well, this is a nice view up here, but it's a little cloudy and low clouds and a slight rain now and then, but it's a wonderful view of what we can see of it.
What can you tell me about the Shaw Creek Roadhouse, Frank?
Well, the Shaw Creek Roadhouse was built here in the early days of the old Valdez Trail by a fellow by the name of One-Eyed Tony. I can't recall his last name now. It's been too many years ago.
About what year was that?
Well, that was about 1906 or 7, along in there, when he built this Shaw Creek Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Some years later, this Tony went insane, and he was taken to Fairbanks and committed to Morningside in Portland, Oregon. But in the days of Sheldon and Gibson and these pioneer auto men that drove these stages from Fairbanks to Valdez, the old Shaw Creek Roadhouse was quite a standby.
Thanks, Frank. I see they have a metal bridge down here, a steel bridge. In the early days, they probably used piling and planking.
That's right.
I will stop and go on to the next location.
We are now passing the old Sullivan Roadhouse that stood along the Tananaw River on the old trail, that is the old Richardson Trail that went along in the very early days.
That's around 82 miles?
It's about 82 miles.
And the next place we come to down here a couple of miles will be the Pig Gully Bridge and Bert and Mary's old place. Tell us about Bert and Mary's old place.
Well, I don't know too much about Bert and Mary's old place, but in the early... No, they haven't been... They're not what you call old-timers, but Rick O'Wallen had the roadhouse down here at the crossing in the early days, and used to go across by... in the river, across the river by ferry there, that is a scow that was
had a cable stretched across.
Had a cable stretched across, and the current took the old scow across. That was in the very early days.
His name was Rika.
No, Rika Wallen. She's an old lady now, and she's still located at the same old roadhouse.
Oh, she lives in there yet.
Oh yeah, she lives there yet.
Matter for so long, I thought she was gone.
No, she's still there.
Well, Bart and Mary's old place for the bridge here is being abandoned, and they're selling it out, and they've taken over the Black Rapids Roadhouse on the road up to Summit. We're now approaching the Big Delta Bridge, and we've passed Bart and Mary's old roadhouse. And the bridge has been repaired. They had a damaged bridge here not very long ago. This is mile 275.3 of the Richardson Highway at this point. There's a beautiful view of the early snow this year, of the mountains from the Big Delta Bridge. And right here by the bridge one time I seen a herd of buffalo. The buffalo used to hang around in this area. And I used to come down here to see a fellow by the name of Forbes, I believe his name was, had the post office here at Big Delta. Do you remember that? There's quite a few people living along this road now, and we're at mile 541 of the Haines Pipeline, located at this point. And we're on our way towards Big Delta again.
Frank, tell about the
finding of Mousy.
Oh, gee.
Cabolan's Roadhouse.
This, crossing this bridge that we just came over brings back memories of the days when another old-timer stampeded into the Shoshana country. And on our way back in the fall, when the grump was low in that country and the ground was all staked, so the only thing that we had left to do was to get out of there. So we started on down the Fesna, and we run into an Indian up in there who sold us a boat. We got down to Tanana in the vicinity of, below Tanana Cross. And we run into some bad water and driftwood piled up on some of the bends, and we swamped the boat. So we proceeded on down to a native village, and we stayed around there 2 or 3 days. And we started out on foot, following the Tanana down. Them days there was no road as there is today. And the result of our sojourn in this native village, we wound up, the three of us, we were all lousy. And we finally made it down to Rick O'Wallen's place. She had a roadhouse, as I say, not too far upriver from where the bridge now is located. And Ricka rescued us. She put us out in the barn with a tub of hot water and got us some clean clothes and kind of relieved the pressure on those little animals they call lice. And we wanted to compensate Rika for her trouble, but she wouldn't take no money for what she done for us outside of when we stayed and had lodging and eat in a roadhouse. So that was the hospitality of the early day pioneer, such as Rick O'Wallen, that is still alive and living in the same place, only from the old roadhouse. They built up a new, nice home there, and many of the old timers that are left in this vicinity are still around to go into that part of the country up in there where Rika is and see how things are shaping up. And wish Rika greetings and look over the country in that vicinity. Well, the name of the boys that was with me was Walter Fisher. I met him in there. And there's a fellow by the name of Eugene Traveler that I also picked up in there, the Shoshana. Just by coincidence, we was coming out together. But that was a long, hard trip going into that country from Fairbanks.
You got about a half a minute, Frank.
That was in about 1916. Well, I'm not too sure. It might have been 14. So,
we're hitting the end of this tape, Frank.
Okay, well.
We're recording while we're traveling along at 60 miles an hour on the Richardson Highway. And we're at the end of the tape, so we'll stop the machine now and refill down here at the cabin.